This is Johnny Anonymous of Mondo Bizarro. The Rabbit Zone show that you are about to experience is brought to you in high definition, Dave Rabbit Audio.
And welcome to another exciting show with the Rabbit Zone. Tonight we're going to feature a band called Zeitgeist. Zeitgeist is currently getting over 200 spins a week around the USA from Alaska to Florida. Zeitgeist has had over 20 top 10 listings on Broadjam. Zeitgeist is an ambiguous German word which means spirit of the ages or spirit of a generation. Zeitgeist has a modern sound but carries the classic timeless feel. Zeitgeist has emerged from Perth, a small city in Western Australia, or as they call it, WA. But the music has a distinctive global sound. Our art is a reflection of our spiritual growth and our quest for understanding and unlocking the magic of music and transmitting the feel it brings. Coupled with the energy of hard-edged rock, combined with intellectual artistic integrity and a dash of many style flavors, Zeitgeist makes for a fresh, honest, authentic sound. Members of Zeitgeist are Alex Antoniak, age 28, guitarist, sitar, and backing vocals, Matt Chalice, age 27, lead vocals, Anthony Eagleton, age 19, bass guitarist, and Dan Warren, age 29, drums and keyboards. Their website is www.die-zeitgeist.com. That's www.die-zeitgeist, Zeitgeist.com. You're in for a real treat. This was really just a fun interview and some great music. So let's get to it. Okay, we're talking to Alex, who is the creator and the head person of the band we lovingly call Zeitgeist, which I found when we were doing the Rabbit Hard Rock shows. And out of 250, 300 bands that I came across when I was doing the show, there was only about 12 of them that I really had an extreme interest in. And Zeitgeist and Alex was at the top of the list. Hello, Alex. How you doing, brother?
G'day, Dave.
Well, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Oh, not bad for a kid. Okay, let's get into this. Everybody's been chomping at the bits. They want to know about Zeitgeist. So first off, the question is going to be is, tell me about the band name Zeitgeist. How did it come about, and you know, what is it? Does it have any significant meanings or anything?
Well, as you know, it's there's a lot of bands out there at the moment that it's very hard to get hold of a band name that's not being used by anyone else. So everyone's familiar with the MSN Messenger, and my our singer Matt, his girlfriend, she was using that as her handle, And I liked the name. I looked it up, and I liked the meaning, and basically decided to go with that.
Well, it's, you know, I think it's a very unusual name. I, you know, if there's bands out there by the name of Zeitgeist, I haven't seen them because I was going, boy, that's a really unusual name. And while we're talking about Zeitgeist, let's go ahead and give everybody the website. And I'm going to give the website again. It's www.die-zeitgeist.com. Now, Alex, let me ask you a question. Now, you added the word D-I-E dash to Zeitgeist. Why did you have to do that? Is that because you had some other bands that were named Zeitgeist?
Again, after we'd done the project, we realized there was. Again, for the .com, the name was in use by an IT company, and we did get some emails saying that the name Zeitgeist was trademarked by another another band. So we put the die, which in German is der, and again, to explain the meaning of the word Zeitgeist, Zeit is white and Geist is spirit. So it literally, just a literal translation, is white spirit. And again, with the German words, they have more than one meaning. Well, the English words have that too, but again, it's the spirit of a generation or the spirit of the times, which is, I think, is quite, you know, relative to our music. And I hope so anyway. So.
it's a great name. It's a great band name. I mean, it's very, very catchy. But yeah, I understand, you know, about the, you know, getting letters and saying if you don't quit using the word like that, you're going to get sued.
Yeah.
We had that problem back in the 60s. We picked a name that we had, and just right before we cut our record, we got a letter from an attorney saying, if you don't drop that name, you know, we're going to sue you. So we had to come up with a completely different name when the record came out. You know, the downside to that kind of stuff is that you build up a reputation of a band name,
exactly,
you know, for a few years, and then all of a sudden you come out with a record. Well,
yep.
When you have to change your band name, everybody's heard your band name for the last 3 years, and now all of a sudden you're some just, you know, like out of the blue. So it really killed us. So we never even got one record or one hit wonder status because of it. But that's that's another story though.
Sorry, mate. That's the beauty of prefixes.
Oh yeah,
a prefix is a good legality too. Verb or band, or you know, it's a good thing to be able to use a prefix if it becomes a different name again.
Well, we were trying. Awesome. Yeah, well, we thought about, and we were seriously thinking about this. We thought about putting the word "up yours" in front of ours, but we didn't. Okay, a little attorney humor there. Okay, let's get into you. Let's get inside your head, Alex. I mean, you know, at what point in your life, you know, when you think back to it, was there something specific that occurred or something about your life in your early years that you knew that, you know, music was going to be more than just something you sat down and listened to on an iPod today or whatever, that you wanted to be an artist, so to speak?
Okay, well, it's strangely enough, it wasn't me that decided. My grandma picked up on it first. She was a concert pianist, and she was playing. We were visiting her one day in Sydney, and she was playing the piano, and she asked me to come up, and she played a few keys, and then I played them. She asked me to copy her, and she turned around to my mother and said, "Yeah, he's got it." And I didn't understand. I was too young then, but apparently when I was when I went to school later, when I was about 9 or 10, they did all the hearing tests on all the students in my year, which is probably about 500 or 600 students. Basically was a pitch test, and came out with 10 top students, and 9 were girls, and I was the only guy in there. Apparently girls have the better hearing than the guys in general, and that was a perfect pitch test. And they gave us all the opportunity to do the special music class, and I picked, there was a choice of guitar or flute, and being brain dead as I was back then, I picked flute, and that was the biggest misery that we that I could have gone through. I mean, flute wasn't the thing for me, and we were quite struggling. It was just my mum and myself, and the school went out and they got a flute for me and lent it to me. And a few months later, I didn't want to have a bar around. I couldn't stand the flute. So after that, we had a great teacher. His name was Mr. Bright. He was a musician, and he had a big stage set up at the back of the class, and first day in, we were just aghast at all this gear at the back, and I'm sure it wasn't the best equipment, but back then when you're a young kid, any gear looks good. There was a PA, a drum kit, and guitars, and he said to us, if you do your homework and you're good, which was pretty rare for me, but we'll let you play in the bands. And well, regardless of that, we all got to have our goes, and I think it was then I decided I wanted to play guitar, and ever since it's basically taken off, so... Basically since I was about 10 or 10, 11, I really wanted to do guitar.
Well, you know, I think you're a marvelous artist, not only in the guitar realm, but also in the vocals. Okay, let's ask another question here. I've asked almost every band this, besides the specific instance that, you know, you can remember and whatever. How long has the band been together? I mean, when did you actually start Zeitgeist?
It's funny that the name came later, but as far as the recording projects came down, Maya was probably 2002, I think, maybe a little bit earlier. I mean, the idea was there. I mean, I remember an interview with Paul McCartney saying he had a song on the back burner for 10 years. So starting with the song Maya, it's probably gone back probably pre-2000, but the actual project was started about 2002. So, and it wasn't finished for quite a while into there, again, with the money constraints and that, we had to do song-by-song basis. So, yeah, probably could be going for a while there, but the CD has only been released for a year and a half, 2 years. So, again, I'm sort of going by my jagged memory here, but you're getting a rough idea of where we're at with that.
So basically 4 to 5 years from the start of the creation of Maya, which was the original band?
Not Maya, the song Maya. When I'm saying
the song Maya, okay.
Yeah, the project of getting the song down.
Okay, okay. All right, well, while we're talking about songs in general, I've asked every band this also. How do you go about, Alex, when Zeitgeist gets together, how do you go about recording your songs? I mean, it's pretty much all digital, isn't it?
It is, yes. I mean, we're so lucky nowadays to be able to have the equipment available to us at such a cheap price. I mean, if you look at the gear that you can buy now for around about $2,000, just not including computer, I mean, you're talking about like a recording interface, you'd be looking at multiple tens of thousands of dollars probably 5 or 10 years ago. So in that respect, it's a great time for anybody to be able to get out and start using this equipment if they've got the patience and the time to be able to record their own stuff at home. I mean, that's basically a good thing. I mean, when we record, we get the idea down and then we basically lay a guide track for the guitar. Then we can lay the drums and bass over the top of it, and then vocals, and then we might redo the guitar tracks again. And then the solo is the icing on the cake after that. Then you've got the mix down process and then the mastering. So you've got a few stages there to go through. With some of the songs we did at home, the M2, but again, I wouldn't recommend anyone to do the drums at home because setting up the drums is quite a feat. I mean, unless you're really trained engineer and you know what you're doing, you've got issues with phasing with the tracks because you can use up to 16 microphones on a drum kit, and that can cause some issues with sounds reflecting and bouncing back and coming in and out of phase. So, and it can really muck with your drum sound. So it's a good idea to actually get them professionally done. It's a bit of a tip for anybody who'd like to know.
I think it's a great tip and something that nobody has mentioned in previous interviews. Okay, let's get into your music because really, you know, I mean, the band name is great and, you know, talking to you and getting your insights is great. But what people really want to know, Alex, is what goes into your music. Now, we started your show tonight with a song that I think is just really magnificent called Awakening. Tell me about Awakening.
Well, basically, I've been interested in all sorts of different cultures of music, and Awakening has a very sort of Eastern sort of sound to it. My mum has been traveling to India since I can remember, and one time she brought me back a sitar, and I had that for a while sitting in the corner collecting dust, and one night I grabbed my guitar out, it was a full moon, and went out the back and sat on a rock, and lo and behold, the main tune for the Awakening came, which is the little twangy that you hear in there. And
I gotta stop you right there. Now you're out back of your house. You're sitting on a rock. Now I'm trying to visualize this.
Granite rock, not just a little tiny rock,
I know you're not sitting on a pebble, but you're sitting on a rock, and I mean, and you're playing sitar. So I mean, you know, my first exposure, now this is a sidebar, but my first exposure to sitar was Ravi Shankar and Shankar, whatever. You say Shankar, yep. I say Shankar. Not to be confused with William Shatner of Star Trek.
Yep.
But but you know, I mean, I first got exposed to that like when the Beatles Help album came out, and I just fell in love with sitar.
It's a beautiful instrument. It's really quite amazing. I mean, I wasn't smoking anything that night. And even though, you know, there's a lot of stigma between the sort of incense lighting and the hippies and all sorts of like that. But again, the sitar is it's an amazing instrument. It's quite difficult. I mean, I happened to get in contact. I was at a party and I met a guy who was doing some sitar performances there, and his name was Sharma G. And again, in the Indian, the G represents the Mister, so Sharma's his last name, Raj Sharma. And strangely enough, he was a master sitar player, and he came to Perth through his circumstances. Again, another story. I had no idea that he was toured with Ravi Shankar, and I gave him my number, and he rang me one day and said, "Yes, we'll come and do some lessons." So I've been studying the sitar for about a year now, and it's been very interesting, quite a eye opener. As far as, like, I've been studying the Western system for most of my life now, and learning the Indian system is something completely different. It's just a real eye opener. Can really expand yourself.
Well, it's absolutely. I think it really adds some real personalization to your songs.
Yes, it can do, and I find that with the Eastern system of music, it's more melodic, whereas we in the West are using the harmonic system with chords and things, and with the sitar you use one string and you've got to play the melodies up and down on that. And if you can, using that can help you master getting your melodies and patterns, getting them straight on the, it all interleaves, you know, the West and the Eastern. So I don't believe in any barriers in music, you know, it's very universal. So.
Well, let's go into your next song for your show tonight, which is entitled Bog Down. Tell me about Bog Down.
Okay. Yes. Well, it's a kind of tongue in cheek. It's a bit of a protest song, not another protest song, as they say. With again the same process. It's usually the song first, the riff. I wrote the riff, and I thought, gee, this would be great for our drummer Dan. Now, Dan is we have two drummers on the CD. Dan is a very, very talented drummer. His parents are his dad's passed away now, but his dad used to tour with James Galway, who is a world-renowned flute player, and they are were the heads of the conservatorium in Perth. And Dan is just the musician's musician. He just lives and breathes and eats music, and at his own cost. I mean, he will not work. He'll just play music. If he can teach, he'll teach, but if he won't take any other job but playing music. He's currently in London at the moment, doing a project with the Hawkwind keyboard player, and hopefully we'll be getting back soon to do some more recordings with him. And Dan just basically opens up, and it's just something he can really let loose on with the drums. And if you can hear in there, there's some amazing drum sounds in there. It just blew me away when we were recording it. And the house was shaking, and we recorded that one at home. And yeah, no, Dan really was able to shine through that. So his mentor is the Slayer drummer. He loves the, I believe his name's Lombardo. And if anyone knows Slayer, they're a very heavy band, and the drumming is just phenomenal. Anyways, so I digress on that one. After we did the drums and the guitars and the bass again, we give it to our singer, Matt Chalice, and he basically give him a song and say, yep, put some lyrics on top of that and, you know, see what you can come up with. And again, he wrote the lyrics on top, which is basically, a protest song, you know, about the Iraq war, you know, and all the oil and the money and, all the things like that. I'm not a very political guy. I'm not really into all that sort of thing myself. So music's the main thing for me. So, yeah, basically that's about it, really.
with Texas.
Let's talk about your song, First World Guilt.
Okay, First World Guilt. Again, same process. This time the singer, Matt, he wrote that, and he approached me with the riff, and he asked me to produce it, as I do all the production on the CDs and all the recordings we do. So I wrote the heavy guitar riff over the top of his little acoustic thing he was bashing out with, and we put it all together, and he said he was sitting in front of the TV one night, and he saw the third world poverty ads, and it was really starting to get to him. He sort of started feeling a bit bad, and he wrote the lyrics to First World Guilt, which is basically how we, as the first world, we use the third world to our own gain. So again, it's nothing cryptic or anything in there. It's just pretty straightforward what it is. And if you go on the site, you can read the lyrics, which I think are great. I think Matt is just an amazing lyricist. He's studied English literature. He's read the Bible from cover to cover 8 times. He's not a religious person, but he just likes to read. He studied all sorts of Indian mythology and Greek, and he reads, and he's such a literate. He just never stops reading. A very intelligent guy, and I think that all comes out in his lyrics. You can read them. They're not just chucked together. There's something he sort of, well, not always. There's some songs he's just sort of done for a bit of fun, but he's really got an in-depth feel to his lyrics, and it really shows through that, and he's much respected for that in the band.
I think it's a great song. But let's sidebar this for a second. And the sidebar is, you know, you talked about your lead singer. Why don't you tell me about the guys in the band a little bit? Let's talk about the guys in the band before we roll this song.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've talked about Matt. He's an amazing guy. We've had some, the poor guy, he does suffer from bipolar disorder, which can be a bit of a trouble for us sometimes. He's up and then he's down, and then it does affect him, and it's good to know that we can work with that, and it's been good. And I think everybody who they are contribute in their own way, so I wouldn't want him any other way than that. Basically, we also have Anthony Eagleton on the CD. He is, at the time he was 19 when he recorded this, which is quite a feat. The bass playing is very good. He is one of my students. I've been teaching him since he was 14. Well, he was one of my students. He's not now. And again, you can see there's quite a good influence there. And it's great to have someone I've taught and to play things the way I'd like to. So that's been a bit of a bonus.
Yeah, it brings it home. It brings it home.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And to have someone so young is such a bonus too. And I have another prodigy, and I'd like to plug him. His name is John Matthews. And this guy is 14, and he is, I cannot believe it. I can't teach him anymore. He still comes to my lessons. And he is just the most amazing guitar player I've ever seen. He's just incredible for his age. He's quite small and slight, but he's got to be like Jimi Hendrix. I mean, it's a big thing to say. I mean, I wouldn't like to say that about anyone, but he is just the most amazing guy. That band is called Kaleidoscope with a C. And if you get on the Triple J website in Australia, you can have a look at that. I know it's a bit of a plug for them, but this guy is just the most amazing guitar player, and I know that he's going to go far. But going back to my students and everything, we had 2 drummers on the CD. First guy was Arthur Nastos. We basically got him. We advertised a long time in the music magazines around Perth, and we got him. He managed to do the 2 tracks, First World Guilt and 2 Endless Night, and then he took off. So he's an IT guy and a good drummer like that, and yeah, we're very happy to have him, and we appreciate him coming along. And down to Dan Warren again, who is the musician's musician. And a funny story about Dan: when he was in about 9 years old at primary school, he was across the road from the main conservatorium, and his parents are the head lecturers there, and the teacher in his class was saying to him something about music theory, and Dan would get up and say, "No, miss, I don't believe that's right." And she said, don't question me, young man. This is correct." So Dan runs out the room, goes across the road, gets his mum, brings her across, and in front of the whole classroom, in front of the teacher, says, "I'm sorry, my son is correct." You know, so Dan is like, since he was like 9 years old, he's like an incredible master of music, and I mean, he's such a lovely guy, and he's really the rock drummer. You know, he's long hair and he really gets out, but he's got this background of, you know, his dad and his tour with James Galway, and he's a very famous flautist. His dad passed away of cancer a few years ago now, which is very sad, but very highly, yeah, very sad to hear. Very lovely guy, and his mum, they're both two parents and musicians of such caliber. Dan's going to go far, and this Hawkwind project, I think, is going to be doing really well in the UK too. So kudos for Dan. Tops to you, mate. So yeah, basically that's how we've had it with the band members. So there's been a few people in there.
Well, they're all very talented. All very talented.
For sure. One thing as well, Dan plays keyboard in Maya, the Awakening and the Big Sleep, and you can hear there's some keyboard tablas and some very interesting sort of keyboard effects. And I'd like to thank Dan again for doing those. It wouldn't be the same song without him.
We'll be right back.
talk about Tempest. Tell me about Tempest.
Well, Tempest is a very heavy song. It's quite quite punchy, and again, I basically made up the scales, and my master sitar player Raj would say, "Oh no, it's this raga, it's related to that." And before I knew all this sort of stuff, so I must have a bit of a intuition for these kind of things, but it's something I came up with, and it's quite heavy. It's got an unusual time signature. It goes into a 4/4 bar and then a 5/4. And again, we want to be, I like to write things a bit different, and again, that can be sort of against us with record companies. They sort of say, "Oh, timing changes here is not good," but it is what it is, and I like to write for my creativity. And again, there's a sitar in the heavy bit. If you listen carefully, you can hear it as well. So I mixed it in there, quite punchy. Again, if I had a choice, I'd like to re-record it, because again, we recorded the drums at home and they came out a bit sort of out of phase, and but again, it is what it is. So if I hadn't mentioned this, you probably would never have noticed it anyway. So opening up to you guys and sort of just explaining everything in the process that goes on.
But see, that's what makes this kind of conceptual show so unique. While we're on it, before we roll with Tempest, let's talk a little bit about how the digital world and the world of the internet has changed things, Alex. You know, I talked to several band members, and you and I have had conversations before this show. You know, I think we all agree that, you know, the difference between, as far as I'm concerned, now this is Dave Rabbit talking, so you can take that for whatever lucky rabbit's foot you want, but to me, the big difference between the independent artist, which Zeitgeist is an independent artist, let's face it,
yes,
between Zeitgeist and all the other bands I've showcased, and even the bands that, you know, were part of the 250 mix that were decent, but they just weren't as great as I thought I wanted to interview, such as you guys. But, you know, all this aside, the difference between you guys and the other bands that I've showcased and the ones I will showcase in the future and the ones that are out there with gold and platinum records is strictly luck. It's strictly luck and who you know, because I guarantee you the bands I've showcased already, and I know the ones I've got coming up that I am going to showcase, in my mind I already know who it is, and you know, I just haven't done their shows yet, but you guys, all of you guys, are as talented with music that is above and beyond the stuff that I'm listening to on my local radio station here in Dallas, Texas. And I'm thinking, you know, geez, these guys, I mean, the song's okay, but I mean, they're nothing compared to the independent artists that I have been featuring on the Rabbit Zone shows. Don't you agree with that, Alex?
Well, thank you. I mean, it's very humbling to hear that. I think it's, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not sort of the guy to think, oh, yeah, our music's great, it's the tops. It is what it is. We work hard on it. Things are changing in the world now with music. I mean, you know that CD sales are on the decline, and the internet is basically, I think, where it's happening. I mean, people are always going to be hopping in their cars and playing the radio, but you see these radio systems coming out now with iPod features. You can plug your iPod in there, and I think things are different as far as, you know, where things are, directions they're taking in the industry, because in the old days, the record company, well, I'm saying old days, probably 5 years ago, probably 5 or 10 years ago now, the record companies were the be-all and end-all decider. If you didn't get it past the A&R guy, you weren't in. And I feel things are changing. People out there are downloading what they want. They choose to listen what they want. The record companies are losing their grip on the artists, which I think is good. And it's good. It's good in a way that it gives more freedom like that. You know, again, we've tried to get our stuff out to the record companies. And if you're not recommended by a radio broadcaster or an industry lawyer, or either way, you've got no chance. They don't accept them. There's no unsolicited. And it makes it so difficult for bands like us to get out there to be heard. And again, you'll get taken, you'll be taken, people will take you for rides. They'll say, yeah, pay us and we'll get this done for you. But again, it's very difficult. And you'll find that the record companies are struggling. They're more interested in keeping their current artists out there and promoting them even more than taking on any new talent. So it's very, and again, I heard a term in the LA scene that getting your music out there, it's like getting a camel through the eye of a needle. It's very difficult. They have probably about 100,000 or 200,000 bands a year coming into the US market, and the radio stations are only prepared to play 5 or 6 a week, if that, 5 new artists a week. And if you do the math, it's not a great deal of artists, so it's very difficult. So in that respect, on the radio side of things.
And, you know, and what you're talking about, I mean, it's almost, and I say almost, it probably is as difficult as it is for the person that says, I want to be an actor or I want to be an actress. And they go to California or they go to New York or, you know, whichever way they go. And, you know, they go out there with aspirations that they're going to be discovered. They're going to be done. But when you look at the amount of actors and actresses, I'll give you a perfect example. You take the last, let's say, 100 movies that have come out worldwide. How many of those movies are the same exact actor or actress? You know,
exactly.
almost every one of the movies. I mean, you know, Brad Pitt is a perfect example. Brad Pitt is almost in every single movie that has come out in the last 2 years. And so here you got this guy that thinks, you know, well, I'm as good as Brad Pitt. And so he goes to California, you know, and he's end up being a waiter or whatever. Now, the difference between those people and music artists to me is that you guys are always able to do your craft. You're always able to play your songs in front of live audiences, or you're always able to sit there and do jam sessions to where you can sit around and do this. Where an actor or an actress really can't enjoy their training, you know?
Exactly.
And I think that really puts you guys so far ahead of actors and actresses, it's not even funny. But that said, I totally understand and I totally agree with what you're saying. I mean, the amount, you know, five a week, I mean, that is just ridiculous numbers. But it just goes to show what I've said before, Alex, and that is it's sheer luck, you know?
It is.
If Alex in Zeitgeist had a friend that was in the industry, I guarantee you Alex and Zeitgeist would be a gold and platinum record right now, you know, with the music that you guys do. And it's who you know. And that's the great thing about the Rabbit Zone shows, is that you guys are getting exposure worldwide in every single country of the world, a couple of exceptions, but I mean the biggies. I mean, and it's even going into some of the communist countries. We have listeners in China. Explain that to me. I don't know. But, you know, music is universal. You know, music is universal. And, I mean, I have heard some artists of songs that are in Italy and France and Germany that do not sing in English but sing in their own native tongue. And I can't understand a word they're saying, but I understand the music.
Exactly. The music's number one. And I remember an interview I saw with Elton John. I'm not an Elton John fan myself, but he said that the first thing you notice about the song is the music and the words, the lyrics, and that they, if you like the song, you'll go back and you'll learn the lyrics and the words. So again, coming back to the universal language, and it goes deeper. I mean, the ancients, it depends whether you talk about the Hindus or the ancient Greeks, they believed that, again, coming down to Jeff Buckley, what he was saying about, it's actually Leonard Cohen, you know, the song that David used to please the Lord. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a religious guy, but I think music has a connection with everybody, that it speaks through the universal language. The Hindus say that the universe vibrates on a certain, on a key, which is C sharp, and I believe that. I in myself, the music is my religion, and I think through music it's such a powerful tool. It really connects us all. It can heal. It can make you feel such emotion. I mean, it's so powerful, and yet it's used so frivolously. They slap it around and again, good musicians, they are treated pretty badly sometimes. You know, it's a hard thing. You think of someone who's in their craft, who's making like a professional, like a doctor or lawyer, they get paid heaps. But we struggle. We really do. And for anyone out there that's doing music, don't be under any illusion. It's a very difficult industry. But again, it is a very rewarding one too. So if you stick with it and you do it for the right reasons, I believe, you know, and you're doing it because you love it, then I think it will reward you. And I'm not talking about monetary rewards. I mean, it's such a great thing to be able to sit down and put on an album and really listen to it. I mean, my all-time favorite is Dark Side of the Moon. I mean, who's isn't? It's one of the biggest selling albums in the world. And, you know, it speaks to you. And when something does it like that, it's timeless. It's not something that's going to be a fly-by-night song. It's really going to work through like that.
Around me and all I see is empty. My broken windows are stained by rain.
Okay, what we're talking about, your songs, we talked about this off air about how I thought this next song that we're going to roll called The Big Sleep was a little bit like The Awakening, and you gave me just a tremendous enlightenment of why it was that way. So will you tell people why The Big Sleep is going to sound a little bit like The Awakening?
Okay, well, The Awakening, the Tempest and The Big Sleep are all one song part, which is called Maya. And it has the introduction, which is the slow part, then it goes into the heavy metal part, and then it comes back into the Big Sleep, which is the slow part. So it's like the start of the cycle, the peak, and then the end, much like our lives and everything that comes in waves in life. So it is very similar to, the lyrics are different, but they're very similar, the start and the end. And that's the way it is. You're coming from the low point up to the crest of the wave, and then it crashes down, much like a reflection on everything we do, you know. So energy's up, energy's down type thing.
Well, I think it's a great song.
Well, thank you.
Okay, well, before we go into the final song of your show, Alex, which is called To Endless Night, I want to tell you what a real thrill it has been for me personally to talk to you. We've had some problems communicating with emails. back and forth, and you've called me several times on my private cell number, which, you know, when you call me, I'm a late riser, you know, since I'm retired and just kind of do the Dave Rabbit stuff nowadays, you know, I'm not an early riser, so I got up this morning and there was like 5 missed calls, you know, from Australia, you know. So, oh man, you know. And so then we're trying to email each other back, and that was just a sheer disaster. But anyway, I got to tell you what a real joy it has been to talk to you. It's been a very in-depth interview, which is the kind of interviews I really like, because you really kind of opened your soul. But let's go. We got to go back for one thing, because we sidebarred. I want you to finish telling me the story about you sitting on this rock with a sitar.
In a full moon
with a sitar. And you got nothing but howling dingoes around you as an audience.
And kangaroos jumping down the street.
Kangaroos jumping up and down everywhere, and you're going, you know.
We ride kangaroos to work, you know that.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, Texas, we ride horses, you know. I mean, sure, I understand that. Okay, I've got this scene painted in my brain now. So tell me about the sitar, which we got so involved in something else. I never heard the howling moon story. So tell me the howling moon story.
Funny comes back to, I'm not going to digress, but we're sitting on the rock, and it comes back. I remember reading an article about John Cleese and comedy. Now, comedy and acting is an art in itself. And they asked him the $64,000 question, which was, where does the creation come from? How do you create? And this is, I have never really been able to put it into words, but he summed it up, which was the most amazing thing, and I think it's the most truth. And it's exactly what happened to me on the night. I think that he said that your creation comes from your subconscious. So when there's no thought and there's no trying, there's times where I've sat down, okay, I'm going to write a song. You sit there and you're looking at the wall for half an hour. You think, okay, you get a couple of little things out. But the true great, I think the really good ones, and I mean, look, I could be wrong, but I agree with John Cleese 100%, that when there's no thought, no process, no trying, and it just comes from the subconscious, There's no trying. It just comes. It just happens. And I find they're the best things that have ever happened. And you'll probably find a lot of people to back me up on that one, really.
Wow.
And I think the timing has to be right too, and I think the atmosphere, you've got to take yourself, and it comes to sitting on the rock, it sounds comical, you've got to take yourself away from your normal cycle, sitting in front of the TV or having dinner or with the family. I mean, I don't have a family, I've got a beautiful girlfriend, but I think getting away from your comfort circle, sitting out somewhere, going to the park, away from people and just switching yourself off and just going away from what you're used to, then if you're lucky, and I'm not going to say it's going to happen every time because people will be milking this forever, then you will get the creation from the subconscious, the unconsciousness. And that is where I believe the universal tune, the key comes from, this spiritual awakening will arise, okay?
Wow. You know, I tell you, when you mentioned John Cleese, now you talk about a creative mind.
Exactly.
Now Monty Python has always been just a tremendous favorite of mine ever since I first saw him on public television here in Dallas back in the, I guess, early 70s or late 70s or whenever they came out. I have just been a Monty Python fan since day one. But the thing I've always loved about John Cleese is this guy is smart. This guy is scholarly. This guy, you know, I mean, he may be a comedic genius, but this guy has it going on. And if John Cleese said that, which I have no doubt that he did, that tells you right there that you're on the same level of genius if you sit there and take what John Cleese said and simply let the juices flow and your creativity will come forth. What a great story, Alex.
I am so glad
we did this flashback on that. I am so glad, you know, because if people would have gone, what happened to Matt the Rock? You know, I would have been getting his emails. What about him riding the kangaroo? You know, and all this off the wall crap. Okay, well, listen, like I said, it's just been a terrific interview. You're a great guy, and I am just so proud to be affiliated with you and Zeitgeist and the rest of the fellows in the band. And you
know,
and before you get off the horn, don't get off. I'm gonna roll into your next song, but I want you to hang on because I'm going to talk to you some more personally. And I think one thing that's really neat about the Skype computer conversations is, you know, I'm talking to you in Australia. You know, it's like almost midnight here. And what time is it there?
3 o'clock. 3 p.m.
In the afternoon. So it's 3 p.m.
Yes.
So it's like Monday night here. So is it 3 p.m. Tuesday there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
See, I mean, what kind of world do we live in? And I can sit here in my studio, in my home, and talk to a good friend in Australia and only cost me 2.1 cents per minute.
It's great, isn't it? Wonderful.
I mean, you know, we've had so much fun, and I've for 50 cents, I can't even go out and buy, you know, a bag of popcorn at the movie here in Dallas. You know, but this has been one hell of a night of entertainment, I'll tell you, and I sure appreciate it, Alex.
Likewise, mate. Touché. We feel the same way about you. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I hope everyone that gets onto our website, they can email me. We're in the middle of organising another CD and getting a tour organised, but I will take any time I can I will reply to every mail that anyone wants to talk to me and drop me a line. The most valuable part of my musical experience is not just writing, it's getting people coming back saying, I love that song, it's great. It really makes my day. I mean, more than money or anything can ever do is when I get up in front of a crowd and we play a gig and they love it and there's 500-600 people there and they just cheer. It's the best. It's the recognition for the work you've done and sharing with the people. It's just something that's more rewarding than any material possession can give.
I'm proud to call you my mate, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Again, Alex's website is www.die-zeitgeist.com. That's www.die-zeitgeist.com. And remember, you don't have to support a war to support the troops that defend you. Peace, brothers and sisters.
You've just experienced Dave Rabbit and the Rabbit Zone. For more fun audio and video, visit Dave's official podcast home at www.daverabbit.podomatic.com. Until next time, this is Johnny Anonymous saying, peace, my friends.